Time now for our legislative report with 117th District Representative Mike Henderson. Mike, always appreciate your time, and we appreciate you giving us a few minutes here today. And it sounds like a busy week for you. Sounds like lots of topics to run through today.
You know, it's that time of year. You know, it's finally we're starting to hear the words compromise, which is always a good thing up here when you hear people start talking about compromising. And I think bills are starting to move, and maybe before we're done, we're going to have a successful session.
It's kind of after that spring break time, isn't it, when, as you said, the bills really do start to move?
That's exactly it. People kind of get off of their things and start to be willing to compromise on both sides and say, maybe this is the best we can do, and we get some things done like we're supposed to.
You know, you take a look at the federal government, which actually doesn't even have to have a balanced budget, and still they can't get together to have a budget. But at the state level, I know that sometimes it's contentious and sometimes it comes down to the last minute, but it does seem to work out all right, especially if you compare it to the feds.
Well, I think that's the best thing, and I think I've said this numerous times. Best thing that we do is we are required to have a balanced budget, and I think, you know, by our Constitution, and we should never give that up. I think that's the best thing that we do. Not all states are that way. You know, Illinois does not have to have a balanced budget.
Right, and they don't.
California doesn't have to have a balanced budget, and they both don't. And I think that's one of the best things we do. We may not have some services that people would like sometimes, but we don't mortgage our future.
Yeah. There's a sales tax issue that you wanted to talk to us about a little bit this week.
Well, internet sales tax. I think that's going to keep coming up. A lot of people refer to it as a Wayfair tax. And I'm in favor of some if we can find one that's good. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in an internet sales tax, but I think we have to protect our brick-and-mortar stores. We have to protect those stores that are there in Farmington, Park Hills, the Lowe's, Bonterre, that are local people trying to earn a living. And I'm never in favor of taxes. I don't think, you know, I don't want to keep taxing people more, but at the same time, if we give them that unfair advantage, that's going to cost us jobs and money locally. So I just think that we have to find some compromise on an internet sales tax.
Is there a different iteration of that bill this time around, or is it kind of the same thing just being put in front of the legislature again?
No, there's like three or four versions of it done different ways. We've got one in the House that would cut state income tax but put in internet sales tax. So the idea being that it would be a neutral tax on people. It would help the brick and mortars, but then it's got some other moving parts that I'm not real thrilled with. And then, but I'm not sure, even constitutional, dealing with Prop C and the conservation tax. And then there's one in the Senate, I think maybe a little bit better, but there's like three different versions of this floating around. I don't know which one we're going to pick up, how they're going to change it, but one of my pretty confident will end up being the one that emerges. We'll make some changes that everybody can live with and try to fix it. And that's why we said some of them are looking at, how can we keep this from being a new tax? So what could we cut so we help brick and mortar, but at the same time, the average person isn't paying more taxes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think people would be a fan of more than just a new tax. Mike, is that as easy to regulate as any other tax?
Well, that's part of the argument there. There was a meeting down here last night. There's 21 states doing it, and I've drawn a blank on the term, that have come up with a way that they're doing this. And there's a group doing that in 21 states, and there's a term for it. I can't remember it right now, Chad, but it doesn't seem to be as difficult as it sounds. And I think people have come up with some ways of doing that. The way they're looking at is that you have a company that gets paid to collect this from the credit card and banks that when these sales take place, and they get a very, very small percentage of it, and they will manage that for you. So it's a lot like what companies do with credit cards and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did a story, and I think you talked to us before about something called the Greenbelt Express. And just to give you a little something that fascinates me, I grew up in a little bitty town in southwest Kansas, and basically the only natural resource out there is wheat and wind. And so we have lots of windmills, and I was always amazed that the energy that those windmills produce actually goes all the way out to California. You can actually import that energy from other areas, and that's kind of part of what this Greenbelt Express is about.
That's exactly what it's about. It's the wind energy coming from Kansas, just like you said, and what they're wanting to do this time, they're wanting to move it east, all the way over to Philadelphia, Boston, and areas like that. Now, here's the rub: Farmington, Missouri was looking to maybe get some of that energy, which helped them with their energy costs there in Farmington, Missouri, which I'm all in favor of trying to help them. The sticking point on this, the bill that we had up here, is they're taking a lot of that land to do it through eminent domain, and mainly farmland, especially out in the western part of the state. And I'm not a big fan of people coming in and taking property by eminent domain. And so I think this thing will get done eventually, but I think there's going to have to be some more compromises on how this is going to happen, because I don't think the legislature is going to let them just come in and have a blank check for eminent domain.
Right. Now, the farmers that actually have the windmills on their property, they actually will profit from that. But in terms of running the energy from one location to another, then those landowners under eminent domain, would they necessarily be able to profit then, or how would that work?
Well, they would get paid for their land. Here's the problem. This would just be power lines, the huge ones, the ones that could sit there and buzz, if you've heard those before.
Yeah.
And they would come up there, and they would be running right across their property. Well, you know, we've heard a lot of testimony how that will diminish the value of their property, just those power lines running right through the middle of it, by anywhere from 10 to 30%. And then there's also still lots of them that have fears of with the cancer from power lines, and we've all heard about that before. And there's a lot of things that people are going to have to be assured of, I think, before this can move forward, because I know myself, I wouldn't want power lines running right over the top or right next to my home.
Right.
And that would concern me, and it would especially would concern me if I had small children.
Yeah, and maybe a disruption even in wildlife.
That's been brought up also.
Right.
You know, a little bit of a disruption of wildlife. So I think, you know, I'm not saying this won't get done eventually, but I think it's something that's going to have to be thought out a whole lot more, because the Public Service Commission has already approved them building this. So they've okayed it, which is usually one of your bigger hurdles. But they're going to have to work out some things where they're not coming in, you know, like I said, I'm not, and I don't think the legislature is a fan of just coming into people and saying, we're going to take your property.
Right. Which, you know, a lot of positives there. It's cheap, renewable energy, but,
right.
but yeah, you have to think it all the way through. So,
yeah, as I said, I think it may get done eventually, but I think there's going to have to be, as we used earlier in this broadcast, a little more compromise taking place before we can get to a point, because I'm all in favor of the green energy. I'm in favor of the city of Farmington getting their energy cheaper. I want that to happen. I think that's one of the great things from it, but they're going to have to work on the other end.
Yeah, and I think when we had spoken with Greg Beavers, city administrator at Farmington, I thought that he had floated a number, you know, realized the savings of, I think it was over $900,000. So
that is exactly correct, and that's why I think something's got to get worked out, but they can't do it the way they're doing right now. There was a rally up here with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of farmers up here yesterday, and with some pretty heart-wrenching stories taking place in the rotunda. So when you listen to those, I want Farmington to get that savings, but I also don't want to do it at the expense of hurting all these people too. So I hopefully we will work that out.
Yeah, we're moving along now, and I was talking with you a little bit off the air about a topic. There have been some changes that are being proposed in the sexual offender list, and I said, well, what kind of changes are those, Mike? And you said they're common sense changes, and those are my favorite type of legislative changes.
Well, they are. They redid the sexual offender list a couple years ago, and now they found out they missed a few things on things they should have changed. There's three tiers on the sexual offender list. And some of them are where they're registered for life. Some they register, and I can't remember the years now. I think it's 20 years, and some are like 10 years. And so consequently, we had some offenses that were lifetime that probably should have been 10 to 20 years. If this gentleman did something when they were 18, or lady, and when they get to be 28 and they've not had anything else on the record, they could come off the sexual offender list. As an example, if you had two kids who were in high school and one is 18 and one is 16, and something was to transpire between the two of them, they can be on the 18-year-old can be on the sexual offender list. And the question was, should they be on there for life? And I think the answer is probably no if they've got a clean record for 10 years. And so we're looking at some things. It's being proposed by a man by the name of David Evans. He's a former judge who used to handle these cases, so he's a perfect person to carry this. It went through my committee, and I can assure you that all the changes are not letting people who've done horrible things just get by. But it's common sense changes of giving them, though, the opportunity at some point to move on with their life.
Do judges have, either currently or under this new bill, do judges have any latitude in how they can assign people to those sexual offender lists? Can they actually apply common sense on the egregiousness of the offense or the circumstances, or is the legislation very firm?
I think it's pretty firm, is my understanding. There may be some leeway. You'd have to ask a judge and attorney on that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some leeway that I'm not aware of for sure, so I'm not going to say there is none. But it's pretty black and white law that you go to Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 based on where it was placed in those areas. So that they may have some because, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think it's pretty fairly firm that sometimes they have to place somebody as a Tier 3 because that's what the law says when they really feel like it should be a Tier 1. And that's why we're trying to use a little bit of common sense on that as we look at that sexual offender list. And I don't want anybody to think we're trying to let sexual offenders off. I think all we're trying to do is make sure that we apply common sense to how we use it.
Mm-hmm. You worked on your very own air evac bill that are you getting ready to introduce that one, Mike?
I've actually introduced it. It's getting ready to come to the House floor. It's been through all the committees and through rules. And then we've got a Senate version of it that is in rules in the House now. And so we've got matching bills there. All we're trying to do is fix it where people will not get that $50,000, $60,000 bill for AeroVac because they have a heart attack and they get AeroVac to the hospital. They should have a bill. And it's going to be expensive. It's expensive to fly in a helicopter. But right now, the law says that all ambulance services get paid first, no matter what. And it was intended for ground ambulances. So we're going to put it back to only ground ambulances, like your local ambulance districts are guaranteed that money. And then we're hoping that's, and we know it's already taking place. There's negotiations between the insurance companies and the AeroVac companies. And our hope is that they will negotiate some contracts between the two of them so that average people like me and you, if this were to transpire, we would have coverage on our insurance, and we're probably going to still have to pay some money, but not use a big part of our life savings and have to pay $50,000 to, you know, and you want your life saved. I get all that, but at the same time, I don't think it's that expensive to fly.
Yeah. You know, there are so many facets of either an emergency or a healthcare issue that, you know, even a one incident can be financially catastrophic for a person. And I know that there are so many smart people who have tried to kind of fix the whole system in one fell swoop with this big overreaching plan at the national level. But maybe this is the best way, you know, just try to fix it piecemeal and do the best you can. I don't know.
I agree with you 100%. I am no healthcare expert either. But I, you know, I've ran several healthcare bills, and I think that's how they're going to have to fix it, is all these little things are out there. They're giving somebody unfair advantage to charge people tremendous amounts of money when it shouldn't be that expensive. I think we've got to keep fixing those one by one. And when we do, you know, we can bring healthcare costs down. There's probably some overreaching that affects everything that we can do, but I think a big part of it is all these little things out there that are taking huge chunks out of people's finances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else are you looking forward to this coming week or so, Mike?
Well, you know, I'm excited to get ready for Easter. I'll be real honest, this is a time of year where I'll be ready to be able to get home and be with my family. My son's going to come in for Easter, and we'll all be able to go to church together, have an Easter meal, and I'm looking forward to that, to be real honest with you. I think you get to this time of year, and you appreciate family more when you're up here fighting some of the battles that you do. You probably have heard that from some of the other ones that are up here. So to be real honest with you, I'm looking forward to getting to come home and spend a little time with my family.
Sounds great. Happy Easter to you.
You too.
All right. Mike Henderson, 117th District Representative, joining us on this legislative interview right here on AM 800 KREI.